With your permission, we'd like to talk shop for just a moment.
Because we've got a good racket going. You're not going to be able to touch our own.
Oh, okay, so you've got a racket going.
Cookies are not the only food. I tell that to my children all the time.
It's time for the Publisher Fight. It's time for the Publisher Fight.
Here's a man that really appreciates that new England power.
Hi, how's it going? And welcome to the Video Week podcast. My name is Vincent Flood. I'm the editor-in-chief of Video Week. And this week's guest is Liam Brennan. Liam heads up global innovation for Mediacom. He's also one of those people who can speak to both the technology side and the creative side and bring those two worlds together, I think, better than most. I think most of us are siloed to some degree in our understanding of the industry, and Liam is, I think, he has a bird's eye view that I think few other people do. Just a few things from us. Firstly, we have the Video and OTT Advertising Guide, which will be returning in September. There's just enough time to be involved. So if your company would like to be part of the guide, please get in touch via the Video Ad News website. Also, New Video Frontiers is going to be a digital event this year. Usually we do a two-day event in London, and this year we're looking at doing an online event, which will be spread out over about 4 days. Different types of events going on, some which will be aimed at networking, some which will be aimed at having a drink and some fun, and others which will be aimed at the traditional conference format. But we're hoping to make it as interactive and enjoyable as possible. Now I'll cross over to my chat with Liam. He's one of those people who I will happily gravitate towards in a room because he's a good laugh and good crack, as well as being full of insights. And I think he made a great podcast guest. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah. How's your pandemic been for you? I mean, it's been, it's obviously been a weird experience in many ways. And actually, my wife and I, we got married in November. Well, we got married in April. So we had to get married in April, and we got married in Japan in November. We bought a flat in October. So coming into the new year, we had this flat that wasn't fixed. We just got married. We moved up things in boxes. We thought, you know what? 2020 is going to be a bit more chill. We're going to take a bit of time to sort the place out. Then we found out that she was pregnant in February, just as the lockdown was starting. So, in a way, it's been a blessing to be able to work from home during this, because just not having to go for her to go to work, being pregnant, being at risk, but also me looking after her. But just life has been moving at an incredible speed. So the Bob's due in mid-September. So if you're listening into this in the past, hopefully things have gone okay. But if you're listening before, I'm now having a very manic 4 to 5 weeks of clearing out the COVID office, which is now the baby room, and frantically trying to acquire baby things off Gumtree and Amazon as quickly as possible, because I haven't been able to go to the shops and buy things. So,
you know, one of the things with COVID, you know, we've all had to adapt in different ways, but, you know, for agencies, the pitch process is such a human process. How have you been adapting, particularly with pitches? And I'd actually be interested in understanding a little bit more about what's involved in the pitch process. I mean, you know, I know what a pitch is. I know that it's put lots of work in, but you know, what is required in a pitch?
I mean, we could go into the contractual weeds. I think all the listeners will disengage, but it's controlled chaos is the best way I can describe a pitch. And yeah, normally when you get a pitch, it's almost like the best of the best of your company, all hands on deck, trying to answer client problems in various markets. And you know, normally when we'd be getting a brief for a pitch like this, we'd be all huddling in a room and flying to various places around the world, working with those teams to come back with ideas and solutions, and then kind of present everything back at the end. But because of COVID, we can't travel and we can't be in a room at the same time. So suddenly that kind of collaborative approach becomes a lot more tricky. But, also the actual presentation of it, which is, you know, your best thinking distilled down into 2 to 3 hours. When you're doing it over Zoom, it's a very, very different experience. And, you know, we've had in COVID, we actually had a few pitches going on here that some were going on before the pandemic, but then some actually after, and you know, some clients delayed it and some clients continued with it because they knew that actually they needed to make a step change pretty quickly. And we really had to adapt to it. And so for us, I think it's been one of the biggest stress tests of this whole working from home and pandemic environment for us, is can we actually, you know, adapt to that world of presenting online. So I found myself at one point presenting, you know, to a very high energy client at 6 a.m. on my laptop, balanced on a variety of different business books and LPs in my spare bedroom, yelling at a small video camera. It was quite the experience, but I think it's a great thing about working in an agency like Mediacom, is you get to work with some of the best people in the industry. And, you know, we've all been through kind of crazy times somewhere or another, and actually, you know, you can adapt to it, just it might not be exactly what you've done before.
And in terms of what you're presenting to the client, is it purely conceptual, or do you actually create, you know, sample assets that they expect to see, or is it most of it, can most of it be squeezed into, you know, a PowerPoint?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of PowerPoints. We're a media agent, so we love our PowerPoints. But with a pitch, typically it's a number of briefs from a client. Usually, a lot of them have a lot of commonality. Usually, they're for individual markets, kind of saying, look, we have particular challenges, and we want to look for an agency that can help solve those challenges. Maybe they're looking for a new agency because the current agency isn't giving them what they need for the future, something they've decided that's important for them in the next couple of years. Maybe they're just unhappy with them, or maybe they just want to see what's out there. So you'll get, you know, somewhere between probably 5 to 10 different briefs, depends how big the client is. And usually you need to kind of formulate a central strategy for the client, work with local markets, actually building what an execution would look like. So it's a lot of an audience analysis, coming up with an execution idea, formulating a plan. So it's all kind of like presenting a real thing to the client, because usually it's, right, you've won the thing, now go and do it. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of you know, big idea generation and really pushing the boundaries, but, you know, you also have to, if you get the contract, go and actually go away and do it. So that's often the scariest part, is like, right, oh wow, we sold it in, we actually have to go and deliver it now. But it's always a really fun process to do pitches for a media agency, because when you work day to day on a client, you often get into that rhythm of just giving them what they want, or indeed kind of, you know, short-term thinking. But when a pitch comes along, it's like, wow, you've got this new business you've never worked on before. You maybe don't know a lot about it, but you know, you can't really pick holes in another team. You have to be like, actually, we're better. We're the best at what we do. Work with us. And so there's a real drive for you to say, look, this is the best thinking, that you're seeing the best of our team, the best of our staff. And when you're in an environment like this, it's even harder to portray that, because you can't be physically in the room. So really your ideas sit on those PowerPoint slides. You know, the vocal delivery over the top can really make or break what would be hours and hours of work from people around the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, the pandemic has been, you know, a sledgehammer, I think it's fair to say, you know, across our industry, and nobody's been immune to it. You know, I mean, I think the agency redundancies have probably been, you know, more high profile than many, but you know, the reality is every single company, and I have not spoken to a single company, and I speak to a lot of people off the record, and everybody has seen a huge dip. And if, you know, I don't think anyone feels safe in their job at the moment. But you know, how have you been, you know, adapting, you know, with, you know, like so many other companies, you've got reduced numbers, but obviously those numbers have been reduced in line with dips in advertiser spend. But yeah, how have you been adapting as an organization to, you know, to deal with the pandemic?
I think, it's been definitely a shock is the word. I think the initial feeling was to sort of get on with it. But I think as things started to become more longer lasting, we've had to adapt not just to, I think, changing demands from our clients, but also how we deliver them and how we operate. I'm sitting in the UK, so we've been into a working from home environment much longer than maybe some of our other markets have. I think for us, it's, you know, it's been a real repositioning, I think, of agencies. Maybe not what we have always. I mean, we. Let me start that again. I think for the repositioning of agencies, I think it's more in the client eyes than our own. I think we've always considered ourselves to be trusted advisors to our clients. And I think sometimes you read in the trade press that there's this sort of death of the agency model, but actually during COVID, I think it became more important than ever that you have an agency that understands your business, that can operate alongside of you to really help you navigate. You know, there's obviously different parts of the media, marketing, and advertising mix that have been affected very differently. But for media, it was almost a complete upheaval in that suddenly overnight, consumption habits of media completely changed. And where people purchased their items also completely changed. So those plans that you'd spent, you know, 6 months, 12 months working on, suddenly just were wrong. And, you know, you had to go in and not only just move money around to where the eyeballs were, but in many cases, completely reinvent what how you would build your media plans for your clients, because their shops might be closed and they couldn't buy their product, or certain elements of their product portfolio suddenly became popular that weren't popular before. And so for us, I think those clients that really worked with us in a much more collaborative fashion got a lot more out of the media agencies than us, you know, in terms of delivering ways to pivot and do it very quickly.
And in terms of where money was diverted to, you know, who were the winners and losers? I think most of us can guess, but I think it's nice to hear from the horse's mouth.
I mean, obviously digital was the big winner, I think, for spend. You know, I think definitely those that haven't had an e-commerce offering saw a massive increase in digital spend, particularly into digital video, because that's where the eyeballs were. People were not just from the YouTubes and the like, but also connected television and streaming services, seeing much higher degree of consumption during COVID. Therefore, that's where the sort of cash flow went. Obviously, out of home, cinema was not doing particularly well when most people weren't outside and cinemas were shut. But definitely it was a real test, I think, of clients that considered themselves to be digitally mature or were maybe sort of not looking at digital channels through a branding lens, suddenly really had to go, okay, how do we look at not just your sort of big platforms like your Googles and your Facebooks, but also the streaming platforms like your Twitches and your Rokus, and how do you get those eyeballs that suddenly aren't watching terrestrial television or walking past stores like they were 2 or 3 months ago?
Yeah. Well, in fairness to terrestrial TV, I think they were doing extremely well, but they saw similar drops in advertising revenue that everyone else did, I think, to some degree. You know. But what about gaming? To what extent is there still just a snobbery about having ads shown against gaming content, or are we over that?
I think we have an awful habit not just media agencies, but also marketers, to sort of putting money where we like to spend our time, because it's difficult for us to understand how others consume media. We call it the M25 effect. Suddenly everyone thinks that everyone's in the UK is like that, those that live in London. And I think gaming has been one of those verticals that maybe hasn't had as much attention as it should have, because there's a connotation that gaming is, and apologies to all the gamers who might be listening. But this idea is it's young men in bed in the spare bedroom, you know, with an Xbox or a PlayStation, surfing Red Bull and eating pizza. But I think that's not the case. Certainly when it comes to mobile gaming, the biggest audience for mobile gaming is middle-aged women. And in COVID, you saw, and I think it's worth making the distinction between people watching people game and people playing games. And Twitch put out some fantastic research a few weeks into the pandemic showing their growth across the board in all their markets in Europe, and it was just astronomical. But it was people watching gaming, and when you actually dig into the numbers, what you actually saw was it wasn't just gamers gaming more, it was new people watching gaming, but a lot of them were sports fans. So suddenly overnight, when all the sports were off television, all those sports fans went into digital environments to watch esports. And that's where a lot of the growth came from. It was a literal swap. If you actually look at the app consumption data, so we did a big thing with Ogre put out in May with some of the strategy team I work with, put out a sort of big thought piece around media consumption during COVID and what would happen in the future. And Augury saw that there was a literal transition between people who were using sports apps before to people who were using gaming apps. And you saw that come through in some of the broadcasts. So, you know, BBC was showing, I think it was Canal Plus in France were doing the same, having the footballers, the pro footballers playing FIFA on TV with the commentary around it. And it was just really interesting to see how, you know, when a crisis happens or when you're forced to make change, how people react, and they can come up with some really nice ideas. And I don't think suddenly gaming is going to become the number one activity after COVID, but I think they're certainly going to pick up a few new fans, and things like esports, you know, have got a little bit closer to being mainstreamed after COVID.
I'll be able to come out of the closet. I tend to keep quiet about my gaming. But yeah, my current girlfriend was quite annoyed that I didn't reveal it for about, I don't know, at least a month before she found out I even had a PlayStation, and I was just like, oh yeah, did I not mention that? I know the stigma well.
The money in that space is incredible. We have PlayStation as a client at Mediacom, and you know, the PS5 looks absolutely incredible. But you know, the budgets behind games and the new games that are coming out, I mean, they're new films. And I think as long as cinemas remain closed, I think you'll see, I think gaming, you know, will become an activity that you won't feel so bad talking about in public anymore, Vincent.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the new blockbusters. They're the new blockbusters. Those games are incredible.
They are. And they're often better than the latest movie. Some of the titles. Anyway, so in terms of, you know, your own personal role, you know, how has your role and, you know, that digital role at an agency, I mean, it was always quite a broad brush, quite a broad role, but how has it been adapting, you know, particularly as, you know, digital becomes kind of everything? It's not entirely true, but you know, we're certainly reaching that point. How has your role changed over the years?
Yeah, so I mean, my background's been, I had a little stint as a TV buyer when I first started, but I've spent most of my career working in sort of digital functions of some shape or form. And you know, there's a bit of a hangover of the digital era. I kind of call it the post-digital era, because like you said, everything's becoming digital, and suddenly I think you've got 51% of global spend for media is now digital. Well, don't quote me on that, but there was some data that came out of the IAB showing, you know, is by far and away the biggest channel in some of the bigger markets, and it's certainly overtaken lots of other channels in many other markets as well. I think with that comes, you know, that way of working in digital, that culture that comes from, you know, thinking about how you apply data, you know, intelligent reach, thinking about how you collapse branding and performance, and indeed looking a little bit beyond just the ad that appears in your face, is something that most clients are now sort of realizing they can get a lot more value out of. And I think if you're a digital person, suddenly those skills become in kind of high demand at the moment. I think the risk with digital for agencies and indeed for brands is that they continue that kind of solid approach to digital. You know, there's still definitely a need to train up you know, clients on programmatic and kind of data and what you can do with it. But really for me, the future is that kind of digital generation that have been around for 10, 15 years and putting them into sort of pan media roles and running clients. And that's certainly something that we've done at Mediacom. The future for our business, you know, we've got those established big brands, but the big spenders now are those digital brands like Facebook and Amazon and Google. And these are clients built in digital, and lots of you know, big brands that are digitally built, like, you know, apps or platforms, don't necessarily engage with some of the big agencies because they do it all in-house, or they don't necessarily believe in the power of branding to help their brand grow. They've kind of grown off the back of growth hacking. So there's a real big opportunity, I think, to see digital skill sets as a real asset and sort of make those people become the leaders of the future for the advertising industry. My role kind of has shifted a lot, partly because I've kind of forced it to shift. But you know, I've spent a lot of time running digital campaigns for clients. But then near the end of my tenure before I joined Mediacom, I was doing a lot of work with digital first clients. So ASOS and Airbnb, I did a lot of work with Adidas for a while, which, you know, do a lot of offline, but they're very heavily digital. Suddenly, I think I realized when I came into Mediacom and did some work there that actually it could become something bigger, and you could have a more strategic conversation with the client about how they look at digital media, but also sort of the technology side of the coin, and apply that to the wider business. And my role's more of a consultative type role within Mediacom now, where I work with clients to help sort of guide them on, you know, their digital approach, but also how some of those digital ways of working can help them improve areas like planning, product development, messaging and creative performance. So it's becoming a really more holistic role, but also at the same time, it's going into that space of how agencies work with clients and becoming more advisory than execution.
Yeah. And what, and you know, I think one of the things we've done as an industry, we always speak about the client who isn't investing enough in digital, or, you know, the idiot who just doesn't get the way the world is now, you know. And I think we're kind of reaching that point. But do you come across brands maybe who have overinvested, or, you know, they're wasting their money on the wrong things just to be digital, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. There's certainly a lot of clients that have overcorrected into digital. You know, it's you know, a lot of the guidance often coming from people who have a vested, you know, vested interest in actually having more money go towards digital. So I think it depends on the client you're talking about. Some are definitely underinvesting, but a lot are overinvesting. And one of the kind of hangovers of that digital era into the post-digital era has been putting digital into a silo and giving someone their own budgets to look after that go towards digital marketing. And most digital marketing tends to be performance focused, or, you know, short-term sales. And suddenly you've got this opportunity now where, you know, I think digital's just the pipes, right? So something like connected television, you know, it's a digital channel, and the pipes are digital, but it's a TV that sits in your living room that also streams analog, well, not analog, but digital signals and sort of, you know, above the line media. So instantly you sort of need to reevaluate digital in your entire media mix and say, actually, how much of our audience is consuming, how much digital is being consumed by the audience you want to reach? And actually, is digital the right way to reach them? Or should we be using other channels? And most mature clients now are sort of looking at digital as part of that mix and saying, actually, you know, we need to reach our audience with a brand message. You know, TV does a fantastic job of reaching all adults, but we're having trouble reaching the younger end of the spectrum, or maybe professionals who time shift a lot. So let's move 20% of that budget towards digital video, and just reach people where they're watching TV in whatever shape or form they're watching. So there's a lot of correcting going on, but I think more recently, some of the ones that have been under investing in digital, particularly during COVID, actually, you know, in the era of e-commerce growing at an exponential rate, suddenly have realized that actually they've been a bit slow to move. And, you know, these were opportunities that might have been 10% of their revenue and sort of put to the side, but then suddenly when they become 20 to 30% of their sales, and it becomes a bigger problem, and then you just divert more focus towards it. So I think it's an interesting time because you're correcting people's work, but also you're coming in and saying, look, let's kind of rip up what we saw before and start again and actually look at what people are doing and what's the right mix, and how do we build you the thing that's going to drive you the most sales in the short and long term.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating just seeing the way different brands adapt and respond. I mean, you know, like, you know, some of the biggest spenders on TV are those, you know, the tech giants who have all the data and all the rest of it. And yet, you know, they invest massively in TV. They invest you know, huge sums in outdoor. I remember, like, you know, one of the most impressive things, I can't remember what campaign it was, but sort of going from the airport into San Francisco and just seeing Apple had just taken every single thing along billboard along the highway, and it just had such a massive impact that you couldn't possibly forget it. Here I am talking about it now, all these years later. Yeah. And I think another thing is the DTC brands and seeing them grow up. I think they're often quite difficult for companies to sort of speak to when they've their first experience of advertising is Facebook and performance, and it works extremely well to them up to a point, and then they they sort of realize, why isn't this working anymore, you know, or why is my, you know, CPA gone up so much, or and then I think there's an important role, particularly for agencies, to play in educating them that there's a bigger world.
I mean, it's that's the opportunity at the moment, really, is those brands, because the established brands that we've always worked with for a long time, they understand the value of what we can deliver. But for those brands that have sort of started small and digital, they're sort of picking off a low hanging fruit and have a culture of looking at a dashboard on a 24/7 basis and seeing that CPA number, you know, whether it's up above the target or not, and then seeing how many acquisitions come in. And there's a limit to growth. And Amazon, they were the biggest advertisers on TV during COVID. I mean, everyone kind of knows what Amazon is, but you know, they still need to go on TV and remind people who they are, but also acquire customers that maybe weren't using them before. And I think the biggest success stories we've had as an agency in the last few years have been our ability to work with some of those clients, like Uber is a client of ours in a few markets, you know, helping them grow their brand, reach new customers, because you just can't do that with performance money alone. And actually, a couple of the pitches, can't say which they were, but a couple of the pitches during lockdown were for brands that were looking to expand post-COVID, because they'd seen their numbers just go through the roof, and that actually we can grow much more than our kind of user base. We need to kind of go after, you know, the mums and dads and the 35 to 45 year old group. And the only way we can do that is actually going beyond Facebook and YouTube and actually reaching the audience.
And do you think there's many brands who, you know, won't be able to adapt to all of this? You know, they've just simply left it too late, and now we're in this pandemic situation for what appears to be the long haul. You know, we're certainly a long haul in business terms. Do you think there's going to be many who just simply aren't able to make that digital transition? I mean, I think there's some interesting examples of companies like Primark who don't have a website.
It's what's the old Warren Buffett quote? If you're after the storm, when the tide comes back out, you'll see who's swimming naked. I probably completely butchered that, but I think that's like the case in COVID. Yeah. Something along those lines. But I think that's what you'll see now, is that during COVID, the brands that were prepared for that digital world made it through it much better. Not that they were completely investing in digital, but rather they knew what role it played in the media mix, so they could move the money around. They knew the balance of e-commerce and offline commerce, and who purchased where. They knew how to use their data in a way not to kind of laser target, but actually to understand the audiences better and what they were buying, and help them inform their planning in real time, because things were changing almost on a daily basis. And some of our clients that have a really sort of integrated team, and a almost like war room way of working, in the first couple of weeks was probably crazy, but they made it, they were able to pivot in such a way that they were able to grow their brand share, and I guess in a declining market, but were able to do pretty well out of it. I think the biggest obstacle for brands is one of culture, and to take a risk requires someone to go up to someone senior and say, actually, I think we should change our ways of working. And when the CMO's tenure is so short, and particularly when you're quite worried about your job safety at the moment, I think it requires a brave person to come up and say, actually, I think we need to pivot, and I think we need to rethink about what we're doing. My team does at Mediacom Blink is we're really trying to help clients guide themselves through that digital world and cut through the BS in a way and say, actually, it's not just about doing a big data play and then putting a whole bunch of money in digital video. It's just thinking about your audience and actually looking at where the holes are in capability and where the opportunities are, and how do you guide someone, build a roadmap to get there. And there's definitely a lot more interest in our services after COVID, because I think for a lot of brands, the solution was just to turn the media off. And actually where they could have moved is actually said, okay, we can't do what we were doing before. We need to find a new way of doing it. Let's take a risk. One of our best case studies that my team worked on during COVID was for Wolf Glass Wines. And they had their whole marketing, the sampling opportunities over summer almost kind of completely turned off, because they couldn't go to Taste of London or house festival, any kind of, you know, big gatherings of people in London to give out their wines. And rather than actually turn around and say, actually, you know what, I'm just going to put it on pause and wait for next year, they said, no, actually, we need to find new ways to get our wines out there. So we worked with them into the Deliveroo to build a sampling exercise through their Editions stores, so their dark kitchens. So whenever someone orders a meal from Editions, they have the opportunity of picking one of the wines that Wolfblass has and getting a free sample. What's great for Wolfblass is they get to understand when people are getting the samples, what type of meals they're pairing their wine with, and also the area of London that they're ordering the most wines, which I'm quite proud to say where I live was the number one suburb, wasn't they? But yeah, they've walked away with, you know, 5 to 6 times as many samples given out for the same price as the events. Lots of PR, but also a lot of data off the back of that will help them guide themselves to the future and what they want to do. And suddenly that Deliveroo partnership, you know, was not a one-off. It's now like, actually, that works really well. So why don't we do that alongside our sampling in 2021, assuming, you know, COVID doesn't interrupt next year. So it's a real nice time for brands to come in and try something new. But if they make sure they ground it in why they're doing it and what they stand to gain, they can walk away with knowledge for the future for when things become a little bit more normal. And maybe they'll be a little bit more digital savvy.
Yeah. I mean, earlier on, you mentioned that, you know, one of the places that money was going to was connected TV. And, you know, obviously that's of huge interest to us. But, you know, I think that in terms of the comments I hear every day, either people are hugely excited about the opportunity and just see this huge greenfield opportunity, land of wonder, or else, you know, you'll get the cynics who are often, in my view, responding to, you know, the amount of PR. When you get a lot of money flowing into a space, you get a lot of press releases. Not all of those press releases will have, you know, substance behind them, and people will start to believe that the opportunity is overhyped, which for me, I firmly believe is wrong. I think there's an opportunity there. But, you know, are you and are your clients excited about Connected TV? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
It's a mixed bag. I think if you talk to people within the agency, they're excited about Connected TV, maybe not from an inventory perspective yet, but rather in terms of incremental reach and how to apply some of that digital ways of working to above the line channels. We're always looking for ways to either increase the reach of audiences or to do so in a more cost efficient way. And I think TV is one of the last mediums not to be digitalized in a way, and therefore the way that you buy it or you plan and you buy it is very much around scale. And suddenly when you start looking at Connected TV, you start getting into a conversation about more targeted reach to a certain audience, potential opportunities for more relevancy and messaging to certain audiences. They're all the things that I think made digital so exciting to brands from a performance perspective, but then later from a brand perspective, you know, with YouTube and Facebook getting into video and the VOD channels, suddenly you could help make more efficient branding campaigns for the big clients you work with, but also it opens the doors for some of those smaller brands, or those you know, you mentioned the D2C brands that are trying to dip their toes in the water. That suddenly opens up a new world to them. And if you looked at what happened in COVID, actually, those D2C brands were those brands that were jumping on board, something they could buy a little bit of TV. And I think because there was that culture of measurement, everything must be looked at in detail, actually what it delivered. It was enough of a kind of risk. It was a good enough risk for them to jump on board and see what happened. And certainly when you look at, there's a great D2C report came out of the States from one of the big connected TV industry groups, which I'm now forgetting the name of, but they showed that over the last 1 to 2 years, all the brands that invested just a little bit in streaming and connected TV suddenly saw a big growth in search, suddenly saw a big growth in website traffic. And it's not direct traffic, which is what they used to, but it's indirect traffic. And if they have that proof point, they'll keep investing. So for us, that's what's exciting, because it just opens up a world for new clients that we could work with, but also helps us kind of evolve the approach of the clients we work with. I think from a client perspective, I think it's a very complicated space. Education kind of needs to be improved. I think there needs to be a more simple model. We have a kind of team that's part of WPP called Finecast, which is helping kind of a lot of clients get on board in that space and sort of simplifying all the different ways of buying through a sort of one single lens with a unique ID. But the reach just isn't there yet, I think, to really get clients overly excited. But again, with any of these things, it can be like a year or two and then it will scale and be a big thing. And the more you can dip your toes in now, the better it is for the future.
Yeah. And in terms of the ad tech ecosystem, what do you think we've gained? Mm. You know, I think we're, you know, we're roughly about 10 years into the programmatic revolution. And, you know, it also looks like, you know, just as we've reached this decade mark, we're on our way out of it to some degree when it comes to, you know, privacy and the demise of the cookie and regulations and everything else. You know, what do you think we've gained over the last 10 years and, you know, what have we lost as an industry?
Yeah, gained a lot of thought leaders. it's been... I can see a lot of clients that have got a lot out of that kind of... I use the programmatic word to sort of encompass everything in this space. I know I'll get kind of yelled at on Twitter, but it's definitely opened up a new way of working in terms of what we would have called performance marketing before, and definitely in terms of a new approach to how we use real-time data and campaign data, not only just from a targeting perspective, but also from a planning perspective. But I think it's introduced a lot of complexity and indeed a lot of siloing. You know, we're still having these conversations all the time about, you know, is programmatic a way of buying or is it a channel? Or does it require its own team? Does it require, you know, is it in-house, out-house? It's just a bit messy. And I think really programmatic is just a way of buying media at the end of the day. And when you think of it like just a method, suddenly it just changes, it removes all the complexity and then just moves you to a place of, okay, how can automation help my business? And does unbundling data help enable me to better reach my audiences or potentially create more relevancy in messaging? Or should I just stick with my broad kind of reach approach? There's, from a media perspective, there's a lot of, and so the whole, you know, Byron Sharp, how brands grow piece coming back into play here. This idea of like laser targeting, limiting reach, retargeting people who are already buying your product, I think that's crept in a lot to brands, and a lot of brands are now trying to undo a lot of that. Some of them have undone a lot of it, and indeed some of the brands that we work with a lot of CPG clients kind of called BS on that very early on. But definitely that persists, and if someone's job is just to look after programmatic, you know, whether that's the client side, agency side, they're always going to fight for their little empire. And I think it's evolved to a place now we need to look at that programmatic way of working across kind of all of our media. How can we be smarter about automation, but also how can we be smarter about how we reach our audiences and the messages we serve to them? So I've sort of got off on a ramble there, but I think it's good and bad. And I hope that now after this sort of COVID mess, we now reapproach it in a new light.
Yeah. I think a huge amount has been gained as well. I think, you know, I think it's the nature of everything. And the trade press are as responsible for this as well, more than most, in that we've, you know, we tend to focus on the negatives or, you know, but a huge amount of good and a huge amount of simplicity and a huge amount of effectiveness has been gained. It is easy. Yeah, there has been quite a few number of problems, which again the trade press benefit from. like say when we, you know, when we're running events or whatever else, it's always far more fun, and everyone enjoys talking about the problems rather than I've got this wonderful solution. I'd like to, you know, it works. I'd like to share it with you all.
It's created lots of good debates, so I think it's good. And to put a positive spin on it too, I like having different thinking kind of come into clients' businesses, and indeed whether that's from within the agency or outside, and even with this competitor agency, someone kind of going in and saying, actually, I think there's a better way of doing things. Anytime that happens in the industry, I think it's very exciting. And even though I think a lot of the work that's done with ad tech might be just work for the sake of, you know, validating the ad tech, it's really changed how some clients operate and opened up, particularly those that are doing kind of a lot of e-commerce, a really you know, a world of new opportunity, like a Disney slogan. But it's exciting in a way that there's so many big changes have happened in media in the last 10 years. Almost throughout, I've been working in media for 15 years, and literally like every year there is something. And if you take a year out of the industry, you completely miss what's going on. And ad tech is causing good chaos, I think. And, you know, now we're talking about the cookieless world and the impact of that. And suddenly there's not just how do we go and find a new way of working without cookies, but actually, should we be doing this in the first place? And, you know, I like those conversations where you can put your hand up in a room and say, actually, why are we doing this? What's the benefit? Should we maybe not do this at all and do something else? And even if we shouldn't stop that, it helps kind of reassure everyone or reinforce actually why we started this journey in the first place.
Yeah, I've noticed a shift in the from some of the more people who'd be close to privacy advocates. The conversation seems to have shifted from this particular method of targeting to targeting at all, even if it is anonymous. You know, that a person should not have that experience of being targeted. So it feels like there's I think that's probably privacy people who just don't want any data collected anywhere and for everything to be anonymous, which is, it's one point of view, but probably not so workable for most of our industry. Do you feel like this shift towards programmatic and focus on data, has it the net effect been good for agencies? I mean, there've been extremely profitable agency products, like Zaxis, or many clients require a deeper level of expertise that they can have in house. But then there has also thrown, like you said, it's caused a large degree of chaos in that some clients are bringing in house or are restructuring their relationships with agencies. Has the net effect of all of this been good for agencies, do you think? Or what's your feeling?
I think on the whole, any kind of new way of working is generally a good thing from the agencies, because it kind of helps us refresh our offering. And I mentioned before that we've become more of a trusted advisor. Well, I think that's the sort of position we're trying to move to, because agencies are great at helping their clients spend their money when it comes to media, right? So when it comes to things like programmatic, a lot of some clients run stuff in-house, some have it wholly out of house. My team helps advise some of those clients on the kind of right mix for running in and out of house, because sometimes it doesn't make much cost sense to bring things in house, not just in terms of overhead savings that might go to paying an agency, but rather that there's hidden costs around staffing and talent and training and acquiring technology and things like that often aren't considered. I think again with all things programmatic, it's helping us, I guess, get the right people in that can help a client guide, and where they need us to have specialist resources that maybe they can't hire in house. So we've definitely ramped up some of our offerings around data guidance, growth marketing, dashboarding, visualization, a lot of business science, because these are things that for a client it's very expensive to bring in house. We used to be very transactional when I started 15 years ago. My first digital roles were basically taking money, putting it on a plan and spending it. And as time went on, the need from an agency became more strategic. It became more about helping clients guide where they should be spending their money, who they should be working with, guiding their partner relations. So I think we'll continue to see new things come along that either we want to build products around or offerings around, or indeed ones that we don't and we advise on. And I think programmatic has been the first one in my career that I've really seen, I think, a lot of change caused by. But I think it's good change. And I think competition is healthy for an agency, because it keeps you on your toes.
I think so. I think, from what I'm seeing, I think agencies have adapted, and I think that trust side is something that never fully went away. Again, I think it's something that when we would often be speaking to brands, trying to get them along to our events and things, it was like you just couldn't pay them to go there. They were just my agency deals with that. Was the answer, and that hasn't changed all that much. And you know, I know even from the there were some recent numbers about, you know, the amount of in-housing going on in the market, and what was I've ever again I'm you know convinced that some brands are indeed doing this. I know that, you know, from speaking to many other, you know, major publishers or broadcasters, particularly on the TV side, that, you know, they see almost no direct relationships with brands, or if they do, it's sub 10% would be if they've got a strong brand direct offering, and then, you know, sub 5% to, you know, nothing at all for many. So it's a complicated one.
Yeah, I think if you're an agency though and still believing that, you know, your future is around sort of ring fencing money and being the gateholder to that, I think that's definitely out the window now. I remember being challenged on a panel. I think it might be one of your panels, Vinny. From one of the big consultancy firms saying the only reason we exist is to buy TV. I'm very much in disagreement with that. If you look at how we build, we definitely buy a lot of TV and we can negotiate good value, but, you know, our value is not solely on just getting cheaper rates to clients now. There's a lot more we can add, and I think that, you know, the agency of the future will be one that really advises. You know, people say the consultants are the future. Maybe not the consultants, but certainly that kind of consultative way of working is what clients want. And when you look at some of the more recent pitches, I mentioned the COVID ones, one of the big ones I worked on, there was definitely an executional component to it, but so much was about guiding their tech stack and saying, you know, what should we do with our tech stack? They were asking us, which parts of the business do you want to in-house and which parts should we put out-house? So they were asking the agent, and we were quite happy to turn around and say, actually, there's parts of this that we shouldn't look after, you should look after. And it's good to have an open conversation about that, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about trust. You know, clients stay with the agencies that they trust and to guide them. And you know, you be honest and say, this, I think this is better sitting with you. And I think for the future of, you know, privacy impact, cost implications, resource, but then also say, look, there's some things we can do a lot better than you can. And if you don't want to do that, it's fine, but we'd advise giving it to us to look after.
I am interested to see the impact of, as we move, as it seems like the next generation of trading platforms are massively reducing opportunities for data leakage. And I'm fascinated to see the impact that has in terms of, you know, I think that was a large concern for many advertisers when it was came to bringing things in-house, was the control of their data, which is a perfectly legitimate concern. But yeah, I'm curious to see how it pans out. Are the consultancies moving into your territory in the way that, you know, you've expected them to, and are they, you know, popping up in pitches with the kind of frequency? I think there was a period when there was almost a mythology built up around, because nobody really, everyone knew, you know, who those, you know, the names of those companies, and might have met one or two people, you know, and there was a kind of belief that they're so smart, they're going to come in and sweep everyone away, which hasn't really happened. And what we've seen is a lot of toe dipping. And they certainly are smart people. I'm not sort of running consultancies down, but they haven't had quite the impact that many predicted so far. What's your experience? Are you seeing those consultancy groups? Are you coming up against
We don't. I've never come up against one in the pitch. I'm not going to go and bash consultants. I think there's, like I said, there's great people there, and a lot of people from people I've worked with in the past have actually gone to work at consultancies like Accenture and Bain. I think they just got a very different offering. If you get a typical media pitch brief, it's not the things that those teams can do. Not from a capability perspective, just not their offering.
Yeah.
We're finding ourselves working a lot with them with some clients on certain projects, but they might be doing analysis of data, or they might be helping guide the strategy behind some sort of like transformation or something along those lines. So I don't think they've had the impact that we thought they were, but rather I think they're tapping into a revenue stream that maybe necessarily we weren't looking at before. And in the old days of WPP, maybe we weren't set up for that. Certainly but back to the point about programmatic being a sort of a chance to pivot, I think if anything, it sort of opened up the the eyes on our side saying, actually, I think we can do this stuff. And I remember when I kind of first started talking about the Blink team that I sort of started building three or four years ago, it came about because I was working on a big tech transformation piece for a big CPG brand. And they were working with an independent consultant, digital consultant, because they had a number of agencies working with them at the time. So sort of partly political, but also just, I think they wanted some specialist expertise. And I remember seeing all of the work and going, I mean, this is good, but I was like, I think we could do this as well. And, you know, WPP is the largest marketing firm in the world. And within that, you've got some brilliant talents and brilliant thinkers, and they might not sit within our agency. They might sit elsewhere. And since then, I think it's kind of given us a wake-up call to say, actually, I think we could be guiding a lot of these conversations for our clients. We certainly have the people. We have agencies within the network that have no interest whatsoever in sort of where the media goes afterwards. They can be independent. So it was a wake-up call. And I think, it's competition's healthy. And we welcome, I think, new ways of working with our clients, because in the future, I think that future model is probably a little bit more consultative than executional.
And what this was a broad question, but what is the agency of the future? You know, is it what you know, St. Martin Sorrell's building? I know, talking to Group M people or WPP people, and St. Martin is always never the easiest conversation for either party.
I don't know him personally, so I don't think he'd know who I am.
No, but. You know, is that the agency model of the future? You know, that it's digital focused, and, you know, his four pillars.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's got it right yet, because we don't know where things are going. And so looking at different models that are emerging, there's definitely things that are interesting and actually turn out to be quite good. And then others that don't work very well. I recently worked on something where it was a partly creative pitch, actually, but it was, you know, we brought in one of our sister agencies that is an agency designed not to work in a big kind of, you know, lush corporate office, you know, sea containers, but actually work in the client's office remotely. You know, it's an in-house agency, but it's WPP. And so, you know, that model didn't exist a couple of years ago. That was something that was brought on by changing client needs, but also competition from elsewhere. And so I think you start to see more and more of those sort of models emerging where, you know, they might be about guiding a client, they might be working inside the client's business because you're tapping into our talent pool and maybe our technology capability or our experience. Yet you kind of don't have to go into London from Slough to see that person and with you all day. There are bits and bobs and things that have popped up in the last 5 years because of that extra competition that suddenly, you know, we as an agency have to go, okay, maybe we should pivot what we can do, at least offer a different service, because that's what the clients want. So if I knew what the agency of the future was, I'd probably be resigning and starting that business. but it feels to me that it's one of guidance and advisory. It's one that it's a very close collaborative relationship with the client, whether that be someone that works actually as part of that team outsourced or maybe within their office. And I think it feels like one that is able to work with, some sort of in-house hybrid model in the future, because, you know, before it used to be about, you know, back to the, I always think of the Mad Men era, but with the media guy and that sort of thing. But, you know, you give your money to your big media buying team in Soho, and here's your budget, and you go and buy the stuff as cheap as possible, and you report back the results. And more clients want to understand more about where their growth opportunities are, help them guide their internal structures, the technology of their own teams, help them work with the creative agency, often a hybrid of creative and media, and then also how to get the most out of their partnerships with, like, the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon, who, you know, aren't just vendors, they're, you know, partners, but also tech platforms, Salesforce, Oracle, and Adobe, you know, completely different now to what they used to be, and the relationships we have with them. So I'm really excited actually about this stuff, because I feel blessed in a way to have the experience I've got walking into the sort of post-COVID world, because I've worked with some of those people that are taking the money after the chaos. And actually, it's a lot of the heritage brands that we work with, so they're turning around and going, well, what do we do now? And if you're working agency, an open brief saying, please help us, what do we do, is like, you know, the perfect brief with a little bit of direction, but it's the perfect brief.
I can, you know, see, yeah.
it's every agency person wants to help out, and I think no one wants to be stuck there just banging out Excel plans. They feel part of the team, and the, you know, the best teams at MediaCom, the best relations we have come from those teams that are really passionate about the business. And it's, you know, we would enjoy more of those briefs coming our way.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, that's a positive, inspirational note that, yeah. So if your business is desperate, Liam would like to speak to you.
I'm on LinkedIn on Twitter. Give me your money now.
That's pretty much everyone. All you have to do is not make any huge, ambitious proclamations on LinkedIn about how society should deal with COVID, and you should be fine.
Yes, I'm not saying a word on Twitter about anything to do with COVID.
I think, yeah, I'm going to back away from that issue too, I think. Okay, well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I think we should probably wrap up before one of us drops dead from this London heat. Thanks so much for taking the time, and yeah, look after yourself.
No worries, Vincent, you stay cool.